Welcome, everyone. Good afternoon. This is the GenSource quarterly teleconference update call. My name is Mike Ferguson, President and CEO of GenSource Potash Corporation. On the line with me, I have Rob Saray, our CFO. We have a little bit of a script, if you will, to walk through to provide some highlights of the last quarter and to start to address some of these specific questions that we've received. We invited questions to this call, and we've received quite a number, and we'll address those towards the end. We've grouped them together into similar type questions and can have a discussion on each of those as we go. To kick off the process, though, I think the first thing we need to deal with to speak about here is about this past week and the news release we had early last week regarding Esso Group EGME, we call them. So we released a news release last Monday that indicated that we had allowed our shareholder agreement with EGME to expire. It had a condition precedent in it that had it expiring by August the 31st of this year if EGME had not provided the initial contribution of $5 million into the joint venture. You'll recall that we extended that by 1 month to the end of September. Some key points on this subject that I'd like to make sure are clear up front. GenSource made a difficult decision to allow the agreement to expire. We did so in the best interests of our shareholders. EGME continued to provide delays and excuses as to why it could not provide the first tranche of financing. That's the it was termed the initial contribution to the joint venture of $5 million. After the 1 month extension and an offer to contribute a very small fraction of the required $5 million initial contribution, GenSource made the hard decision, based on its judgment, that EGME would continue to delay and tie up the joint venture while never properly coming through with the full initial financing. Further, if we did allow further time and EGME did come up with the initial contribution, the initial $5 million, the mode of working that we had witnessed over the past several months since the signing of the shareholder agreement resulted from GenSource in a lack of confidence that EGME could or would provide the required project financing going forward, a situation that would significantly further jeopardize and delay implementation of the first project. Of course, the commitment as part of the shareholder agreement was that EGME would provide full project financing in the range of $210-$220 million to construct that first plant. We understood the impact this decision would have and did have on our share price in the public market. There's no question. That's what made it a very difficult decision. It was a strategic decision based on GenSource's business goals and its determination to move forward and create a new and independent potash producer in Saskatchewan. We are not in the business of playing games with market value or trying to influence stock price based on partial information. EGME's apparent business approach to projects is simply not compatible with GenSource's goals. On that basis, it simply made no sense to continue a relationship with a group that does not have the same development goals as GenSource. By making this decision now, GenSource has maintained full ownership and control of the entire Vanguard area. In the end, we believe this is a good news story. It's one of short-term pain for long-term gain. Our action has cleared the decks, so to speak, and made room for groups who have a genuine interest in creating a new and independent potash producer in Saskatchewan to come forward and participate now in the immediate term for the first project rather than lining up for a second or subsequent project. So that's some clarifying remarks we'd like to make on the EGME situation. There's certainly a lot of questions generated around that. And I hope this context has provided some understanding of where we came from. It was a business decision based on on lack of meeting commitments in our legal agreement, which was the shareholder agreement. The next item I'd like to talk briefly about is the path forward. Where do we go from here? So our path forward as GenSource has not changed. Our path forward is to stay true to our business model. You'll recall that our business model is to be small, very efficient, and vertically integrated. We believe in that business model. We think it's the right approach, and we will continue to pursue that model. As we've previously disclosed, we continue to have discussions with currently as many as six different groups to create the next partnership. All of these groups are genuine potash end users or established fertilizer industry players. They are real and capable groups who are specifically interested in potash production and in what GenSource is doing to create new production in the world. Since completing the feasibility study for Vanguard 1 in June of this year, we've seen a dramatic increase in the level of interest in what we're doing. That interest is technical in nature, it's business structure in nature, and it's interest around novel product delivery ideas and methods that we've implemented in the feasibility study. So having completed the feasibility study, which to just go backwards a little bit, was part of the shareholder agreement. The initial contribution that the EGME was to provide was very specifically to complete the feasibility study. When EGME was not forthcoming with that that financing to complete the feasibility study, of course, GenSource, as a strategic decision, carried forward and completed the study using its own capital. We felt it was more important to actually finish the feasibility study than it was to try and delay and bring EGME on board to have them finish it. So we finished it on our own, and we have published the results, a summary of the results of it, and the 43-101 version of that feasibility study is posted on CDAR and accessible to everyone. So that has been a key milestone for us, having reached the feasibility study stage. That has brought tremendous interest from these end user or market partner groups, as we call them. In addition, we are interested to see the high interest from private equity groups that we have spoken with recently. That interest is with respect to project financing at the joint venture level. So the completion of the feasibility study has started to generate genuine interest in project financing. The projects, as you know, are small. They're only 250,000 tons per year, but that also makes them only 210 million US to construct. That becomes a very financeable number, rather than $3 or $4 billion to construct a larger project. And we're seeing private equity groups now demonstrate specific and genuine interest in becoming part of a consortium to finance this project. Since allowing the shareholder agreement to lapse, we've also seen an increased sense of urgency in our discussions. We believe that's because of the ability now for one of our partners, who's in line, so to speak, right now, to move to participate in the first project on an immediate basis, rather than getting ready for a second or subsequent project. So we're, in summary, our business model, we believe, is sound. It's the right way to go. Business goal, becoming a new independent producer in the potash industry, which, of course, we believe the industry sorely needs. The right way to go is to be small, be vertically integrated, and be ultra efficient. Some questions. I'd like to deal with a few questions now. As I said earlier, we've kind of grouped the questions together into like questions, so none of them are actually word for word from the questions that we've received. But we did, of course, receive many similar type of questions. And the number one question, as you might imagine, is around off-takers or partners. Many questions regarding who the next customer is or when the next customer is coming to the table. So I'd like to make the point that bringing the next partner to the table is our number one priority. There's nothing more important to the company and to the success of the project than that. We have never been and never will be a one-trick pony. We have been in discussions with many other parties for many, many months, even concurrently with the EGME shareholder discussion and the subsequent negotiations around trying to obtain the initial contribution financing from EGME. So we will continue to work and are working diligently with all of our contacts, all of the groups with whom we're in discussions, to bring that next partner to the next stage of discussions, to bring them forward to the first project rather than, as I said, the second or a subsequent project. None of our current discussions are introductory. They are all advanced discussions, and we're working very hard to identify that first partner to come forward. We fully understand that the basis of a joint venture project is that it must have an offtake partner or a customer in place. With a genuine and capable offtake partner in place, financing can be brought around, as we've learned from our private equity contacts. Financing can be brought to the project. The key is that offtake partner. And I can assure our shareholders that we understand that fully, and that is our number one priority. We certainly can't discuss any names in public. These are all confidential discussions. But as a partner does come forward and documents are agreed to, we can disclose details at that time. Second most popular question was around, again, the ESSO Group ME, the EGME situation. Variations on the theme in terms of what happened or how did it happen or why did it happen. I believe we've discussed the EGME situation already and provided some good background regarding that situation. Again, as a partner shows itself to be unwilling to live up to its commitments, a clear decision has to be made whether or not to carry forward with that partner. Clearly, we could not carry forward with a partner that was only partially committed. To do so would have tied up project assets within the joint venture, which would not have been in the best interest of shareholders. The continued delays that we believe would have occurred within the joint venture had we allowed small fractional payments to be made instead of the initial $5 million contribution, we believe would have been tremendously detrimental to the ultimate development of the first project at Vanguard. So again, it was a strategic decision on our part to not provide another extension and instead to simply let the agreement lapse. We had a number of questions on financing, and these are questions regarding financing for GenSource itself going forward, as opposed to project level financing. And I'll let Rob Saray have a discussion on the financing side. Rob?
Thanks very much, Mike. Rob Saray here. Clearly, as a junior resource company, access to capital is always very, very important element in a company's development. And we're very wary of this. And as such, we've been working with a few private equity and a few strategic investors that we've identified and that have reached out to ourselves in the United States and the United Kingdom and other places of Canada who are interested into entering into a position in GenSource. At the corporate level, GenSource product. We have been working on this for several months now, and what these strategic investors bring to the table or to bring to the shareholders is further access and to potential offtake partners, but critically also access to larger pools of capital for project financing. Project financing is not a simple and straightforward task. It's very complicated and it's very detailed. And what gives us great confidence is a number of these, some of these groups are looking to come in and be a strategic investor into GemSource and help lead us through into project financing. We will have a financing in place relatively quickly. I do not have the terms of the financing as of yet, but if anybody is out there who might be interested in participating in the financing, to please existing shareholders to please let me know, and we'll do our best to accommodate them. The use of proceeds for the financing is twofold. One is, of course, working capital for the company. Most importantly, though, is to continue on with our work on project number two. We expect to have a financing to a maximum of $5 million. However, given the current state of the stock price, we would not be looking at raising the full $5 million at these prices. We would be looking at perhaps something smaller, lower than that, or a smaller dollar figure than $5 million at current price, and continue on as we move forwards with market partners. Again, it's very important to understand that our goals have always been to have diversified partners and diversified projects or a portfolio of projects within the company, within GemSource. And from the strategic meetings that we've been having with capital partners, what we found and what we know to be true is there is tremendous interest at the joint level, or joint venture partnership financing opportunity. And one of the reasons for that is because it is a private joint venture, and it is quite a bit easier to structure a financing in a private joint venture than it is through a corporate financing directly through GemSource, which would be detrimental to our shareholders. So as we move forwards, expect to see a news release and comments around financing. Again, we will have terms announced as soon as we possibly can, and the financing will close relatively quickly as well. So with that, I'll pass it back to Mike to continue on with the question.
Thanks, Rob. The takeaway, I think, on that is that the GemSource itself, our plan is that it will always remain a very small group, and we'll work to ensure that project development costs are borne by the individual joint ventures as they develop those individual projects to the extent that that's possible. Having said that, it's certainly a requirement from GemSource's perspective to set those projects up, identify them, and put them on the map, so to speak, and then transfer them to the joint ventures where the real development work can carry forward. We had an interesting question around the current status of the environmental assessment process with the Saskatchewan government. So I can say that we have submitted a very detailed project proposal or a project technical proposal to the environmental assessment branch in Regina. That was submitted at the very end of June. They got back to us with an initial set of questions or information requests at the end of August, to which we have responded. And at this time, we expect to hear, there's no specific timeline on the iterations around information requests, but we do expect to hear something in the next month from the Ministry of the Environment with respect to environmental approval for the Vanguard 1 project specifically. Each of these, of course, are are licensed and approved on a one-off basis. Each project has to be proposed, reviewed, and approved. So this is for the Vanguard 1 project. We had another very interesting question, I thought, with respect to, again, back to ESSEL Group a little bit. Did ESSEL get into enough detail to be able to replicate your model? And our answer to that is we don't believe so for a couple of reasons. Number one, we did not see any technical depth within EGME. They were privy, of course, to our conceptual study, our PEA, which had been completed about a year ago or so. But by the time we had actually completed the full feasibility study over the summertime and had it together in a form that was contiguous and available for sharing, we had started to grow concerned enough that that detail was not shared. The second aspect is that you may have seen on our recent news release, our technology partner, Innovari Technologies, has received a patent approval for the efficiency processes that we are using in the surface plant. So those processes are now patented and controlled by, of course, the Innovari Technologies. GenSource is a licensor of that technology, so we have access to it, but EGME or others currently do not. Another question about more future looking, I guess, is kind of a two-part around how do you see the potash industry in the next 5 years' time and how will GenSource be competitive in it? And a second part to that around the likelihood of other startups succeeding, projects in areas like Eritrea, Congo, and other Canadian juniors. So to start with the first one, we see the industry, we hope that in 5 years' time, the potash industry will have begun its evolution, what we see as a required evolution from its current controlled structure that has been an aspect of the potash industry for a very, very long time, to one where there are more independent producers of the product and the commodity itself is starting to be a more openly traded commodity with true price discovery, like other bulk commodities around the world, and evolve away from the private sale controlled and opaque pricing system that is in place now. And of course, that hope comes from, number one, the fact that markets and customers do not like oligopolies or control structures, so they'll work to get around those structures however they can. And number two, we think that those structures have been detrimental overall to the use of potash for its intended purpose, which is to grow food and improve crop yields and crop quality around the world. So we believe that by having the potash industry evolve towards a more openly traded commodity, it will make potash more available and more affordable to the ultimate end user, which is the individual farmer that puts this product on his field. The second part of that question was the likelihood of other startups succeeding. I like to kind of, this is all supposition, of course, but we've seen over the last 8 or maybe even 10 years now, the appearance of potash projects all over the world. When prices were high and there was great excitement around the potash industry, projects jumped up everywhere. And as the price of potash has started to decline in recent years, and some of the major brownfield and greenfield expansions within the existing producer network have come to market, a lot of the projects that we've seen in mostly in Africa, in Ethiopia, Eritrea, Congo, have reinvented themselves from normal potash or regular potash, MOP, muriate of potash, which is what Saskatchewan produces, to an SOP or sulfate of potash product. The SOP is a higher value product. It's an excellent fertilizer for chloride sensitive crops or soils, but it has a very small market. It trades at a premium price, which we believe is why many of these projects have converted themselves to SOP projects rather than MOP projects. They're chasing that improved price. But as existing players in the SOP market are expanding and more new entrants are trying to push into the SOP market, we're seeing a greater supply of SOP, and the premium price that's paid, the delta between MOP and SOP, is starting to shrink back to more historical levels. In recent years, that premium has been significantly above historical levels, and we're starting to see that gap diminish now.
Hello, everyone. I'm sorry. I think we had a technical problem here. We've lost Mike in midstream. Please bear with us for a few seconds. We will try and reconnect Mike to the call. For some reason, he's been cut out.
I'm not sure where the system cut out. I was discussing the other MOP projects, both in Canada and generally around the world, where projects have, and they're kind of legacy projects from 6 or 8 or 10 years ago that have kind of hung on. In order for any potash project to be successful these days, it has to be exceedingly low cost. It has to be at the very low end of the operating cost curve, and it has to, we believe, have an additional hook or optic or advantage to it that truly makes it economic. We've seen projects advance through feasibility study stage, but as soon as they get into the project finance stage and the detail analysis and the commercial terms are worked up by the by banks and by funding institutions, the process stops because it becomes quite clear that that these projects simply do not provide an economic return at current and expected future potash prices. And certainly nobody is expecting potash prices to do any dramatic rises in the next decade. So we're looking at flat to perhaps very slowly rising potash prices over the next many years. And we know, internally to GenSource, we know from our experience in the industry that most new potash projects require $400 or more per ton potash prices in order to make any economic sense at all. So at 250 or so, wherever we are at right now, we have a long ways to go before any of those projects become economic. So I would suggest that we won't see any of those new projects advance until such time as the economic situation and the supply-demand dynamic out there supports them, because most of those projects, of course, are very large scale. 3 to 4 million tons per year production is a big lump into the potash market, which is only in the range of 60 million tons per year. So that's our opinion or a view of other projects around the world, and it's a challenging dynamic, and all these factors are what have driven the creation of our own business plan of being at the very low end of the cost curve and being very, very small on top of that. Those two features allow us to find that market that we need and to finance this much smaller project and advance it to production. That really is the end of the questions that we have, that we received. I hope those are satisfying answers. We'll certainly do another call like this next quarter. And please stay in touch with us directly at the office. Feel free to phone or email at any time. And we'll look forward to communicating with all shareholders through our email lists as well as news releases in the coming weeks. Thank you very much for your attention and attendance at our conference call to cover this last quarter. We appreciate your interest in GenSource, and we appreciate your continued support of GenSource. Thank you again.